discover the tips and strategies that will help you achieve your retirement goals. I'm your host, James Knoll, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping you retire well. It all starts right here on Ready for Retirement. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ready for Retirement. I'm your host, James Knoll. Today's episode is all about getting organized, and specifically, how can you best organize your financial life in retirement? Because whether it's our desk, our rooms, our homes, our to-do lists, getting organized can seem very overwhelming, and in a lot of cases, it is overwhelming. But also in a lot of cases, once you finally start to get organized, you realize that it's sometimes simpler than we thought it would be. And it's just really the thought of it and the anticipation of getting organized that is sometimes worse than actually the organization itself. And I find this a lot with financials, is there's this dread over, oh my gosh, I know I need to get organized. But once people actually do it, they find it's a lot easier than they thought it would be. And it's because it's the anticipation and it's the unknown really that makes it more difficult. It's really not knowing the steps to take to get organized is more often than not what prevents us from doing so. So in today my goal is to help you understand how you can best organize your financial life. And what I want to do is just give you an overview of what should be organized and some tips about how you can best do it. So that is today's episode. Now, real quick, if you have not already done so, want to make sure that you know and check out the YouTube channel we have. The YouTube channel is under Root Financial Partners. You can find this episode as well as additional content and more content that we have plans to be creating there as well. So check us out on YouTube. Please leave a review if you've not already done so already. Reviews help the show to grow. And every month getting more and more people downloading the show, which means we're helping more and more people. So really appreciate all of you who are sharing this episode or sharing this podcast with friends and family. It is really helping the show to grow. So with that being said, let's talk about the different areas that we can get organized. Number one, the first place that I recommend people start is just with investments. Now, a lot of times people have multiple employer plans. Maybe they've gone from job to job to job over their career. They might have multiple 401ks. Maybe some of those 401ks have turned into IRAs. Maybe they started Roth IRAs over the year. Maybe they have different brokerage accounts. And before they know it, they've got a whole bunch of different things. Well, once you have all these different accounts, the question is, do you really know what your overall portfolio looks like? And more importantly, how is it helping you work towards your goals? The answer for a lot of people is no. They don't know what their overall portfolio look like. They don't know what their investment allocation is across the board because they have way too many different accounts to actually track anything. So when you do this, it makes it difficult to plan because you don't know how many of these accounts are owning the same exact investments over and over again. When I retire, do I know which of these accounts I'll pull from first? Which of them are going to focus on long-term growth? Which are going to focus on preservation? Which are going to focus on other goals? If we're not organized, we likely don't have a whole lot of insight into our different accounts and, more importantly, what those accounts can do for us. So what can we do? Well, number one, you want to make sure as much as possible you're consolidating by account type. So for example, maybe you have three old 401k plans from former employers and a traditional IRA that you started years ago. Well, that's four different accounts, which means there could potentially be redundant overlap and fees and expenses and holdings. Do you really need that? Well, probably not. Unless you have a really good reason for it, a lot of times 401k plans, assuming they're pre-tax, should be rolled over to a traditional IRA. What you can do there is those three 401k plans in that traditional IRA, can you consolidate them all into one IRA? Doing this will help you ensure that there's not unnecessary overlap, that you can maybe trim some of the expenses of some of the accounts or some of the funds. So again, if you have pre-tax 401k plans, those can roll over into one IRA where you have more control and more flexibility as to how that account is managed. Now, there are some cases where this doesn't make sense. Maybe you retired from an employer after the age of 55 and you have that company's 401k plan, but you're not yet 59 and a half. Well, if that's the case, you probably want to keep that 401k where it is unless there's other assets you'll draw from. And the reason for that is with a traditional IRA, you can't touch those funds until 59 and a half without penalty. Whereas a 401k, if you leave your employer at 55 or later, you can access those funds then. So there are sometimes reasons to have multiple accounts, but if not, it's usually best to consolidate. Do you have multiple Roth IRAs? Maybe you consolidate to one. Again, this helps you to align the investment strategy. Do you have multiple brokerage accounts? If so, you should consider consolidating those into one. Now, there are cases where it does make sense to have multiple different types of brokerage accounts. Say, for example, one is for a retirement goal and one is for a home purchase fund that you want to buy a second home in retirement or something like that. Well, in that case, it probably actually makes sense to have two. I do like having different accounts if they're earmarked for different purposes and different goals. So that is an example of when you should or maybe should at least consider having multiple types of the same account, but make sure that you're consolidating if it's the same goal and same account type. Now, some people hear this and they say, oh my gosh, I have concerns over one account. Isn't that not diversified? Well, you have to understand where diversification happens. Diversification happens at the investment level. So you don't diversify if you just own multiple accounts. In fact, sometimes it's the opposite. People own five different and the same types of accounts and think, oh my gosh, I'm diversified. But then they own the same exact thing, just in a different type of mutual fund in each account. And what happens is the multiple accounts tend to lead to less diversification because there's more overlap because it's just harder to track what's going on in each account. So yes, you want to be diversified. Yes, you want to have your money spread out. No, that does not mean you do so by opening a whole bunch of different types of accounts. If anything, that sometimes creates more confusion and leads to less diversification because there's not the careful coordination of what's going on. So when should you open multiple types of the same account? Well, as I mentioned, when you have different goals, if you have one account that's for retirement and one's for home purchase and maybe one's for sending kids to college or something like that, well, that's where you might want to have different types of accounts. Each of those accounts is going to have a different investment strategy, so having them separated is actually a good thing in some cases. So again, whether it's retirement or maybe you have a long-term care account where you're self-funding long-term care and you want to have that invested differently than your retirement portfolio, or maybe you have a legacy amount. These are instances where it doesn't hurt to have separate accounts. But overall, getting a clear financial picture can really help to ease that transition into retirement because you know what accounts you have, you know how each account is invested, you know which accounts you'll be drawing from first, you know how they're being managed, you know how your investments continue to grow or generate income or do what they need to do, you know what tax liabilities or opportunities may exist. That's the benefit of having the organization. You can see really clearly how everything ties into each other. So that's number one, the first place that you should look when you're looking to organize your financial life. Start with investments. The second thing that you should do is create an updated net worth statement. Now, this maybe sounds a little complicated. It's really not. It's really just understanding what your assets are and what your liabilities are. And you don't need to complicate it. It's essentially, what do you own? This could be cash. This could be investment accounts. This could be home. This could be other property. Minus what you owe. Any mortgages, any car payments, any credit cards that you have. So your net worth is just showing you what you own all in one place. Now, it's important to know this because when you see your total balance sheet, you can make decisions about how to optimize it. And when I say balance sheet, I'm looking at the same way as a net worth statement, just listing all of your assets and all your debts on one place. And in doing that, it can help you make some important decisions. Of you can look at this and say, okay, maybe I have too much in cash. Should I use it to pay off a mortgage? Or maybe I have too much in cash. Should that be used to put in investments? Or maybe everything I have is in a pre-tax 401k or traditional IRA. Maybe I need more money in cash or more money in brokerage accounts to help balance my tax liability going into retirement. So there's not an optimal balance that you should have in cash, that you should have in property, that you should have in pre-tax accounts or Roth accounts. Really, it's going to be specific for you. What's best for you? But in order to determine that, you really need to understand what do you own and what do you owe. So creating that updated net worth statement goes a long way in helping you to understand that. And again, it's as simple as pulling out a piece of paper or pulling out a spreadsheet and listing your different property, your different assets, and then listing in a separate column your different liabilities to get a sense of what is the total value of everything that you own minus everything that you owe. So that's number two, is creating an updated net worth statement will help you to stay organized year to year. Number three, the third thing that should be organized, and this is an important one, is estate documents and beneficiary designations. So this can seem overwhelming to a lot of people to say, oh my gosh, my estate plan, that seems really complicated. How do I do that? Well, let's break it down very simply. Number one, the first thing that you want to look at is who are the beneficiaries on each of your accounts? Start with that. The nice thing about IRAs or Roth IRAs or 401ks or 403bs, any qualified retirement plan has what are called named beneficiaries. So if something happens to you, you can name who do you want the primary beneficiary to be? Who do you want the contingent beneficiary to be? You can name that directly from these types of accounts. Now, this is especially important to update if there's been a change in family status, whether that's death in the family or a birth or a divorce or a change in how you want assets to be distributed. And by the way, this is another benefit to consolidating accounts. I've seen people who have multiple traditional IRAs. Their ex-spouse was a beneficiary on one, and their current spouse was the beneficiary on another. And so again, another benefit of consolidating accounts is that it's less things that you need to track, or it's fewer things that you need to track. So start by making sure that accounts that can have named beneficiaries have the correct named beneficiaries. So that's the benefit of retirement plans. Now, non-retirement accounts don't by default have named beneficiaries. So you can add what's called a transfer on death designation or a payable on death designation to these. But by default, if you just set up an individual account, there's not necessarily a beneficiary on that account if you were to pass away. For a lot of people, the most ideal way to title these accounts is in the name of their family trust. And a family trust is typically just a revocable trust that you and maybe a spouse own, and you can place your assets into it and you still control the trust. It's really just an extension of you. So you still essentially own the account, but the trust says what should happen to those assets should you pass away. Do those monies go directly to your children? Do your children get some of that money at age 25, some at 30, some at 35? Do you want specific gifts to be made to a charity or church or other people along the way? So a trust really just allows you to own the asset, but then it tells you or it tells the asset what it's supposed to do if you were to pass away. So that's where proper estate planning really starts, is kind of titling beneficiary designations correctly. The second place is, are your actual estate documents in order? So we won't go through all of these in terms of the ins and the outs and specific planning points around them as much as high level, here's the things you want to make sure that you own. Number one, you want a will. A will is just a legally binding statement that directs who will receive your property at your death. If you don't have a will, well, the state is going to determine how your property is distributed. So a will goes into effect upon your passing. It says what happens to your assets after you die. A trust is another estate planning provision that you should have. And there's a whole bunch of different reasons for setting up a trust. And there's some more complicated advanced trust for estate planning reasons. But in general, for a lot of people, they just need a basic trust, a basic revocable family trust to help avoid probate. And if you establish a revocable living trust that terminates when you die, any property in that trust, that passes immediately to beneficiaries, which means beneficiaries don't need to go through probate, which is a lot of time and a lot of money. This saves that time and the money for beneficiaries. So trust, if you put your home in a trust, for example, and you pass away, the trust would say where that asset is to go when you die. If you own your home and it's not in a trust, then it goes through probate, which can be a couple years and can be thousands and thousands of dollars and is really just a hassle for beneficiaries to go through. So you want to make sure that you have a trust if necessary. Number three, a power of attorney. A power of attorney is a very important estate planning document as well, and it allows you to appoint someone who is called your attorney in fact, and that person then acts in your place for financial purposes when and if you ever become incapacitated. This is important because if you do not have a durable power of attorney, no one can represent you and make important financial decisions or healthcare decisions unless a court appoints a conservator or a guardian. So that court process, it can take time and money, and the judge may not choose the person that you would prefer to be your power of attorney, or your attorney, in fact, I should say. So make sure that you have that power of attorney in place so that if something is needed and if you become incapacitated, does the individual or the individuals that you would want making decisions for you, do they have the power to do so? And then what ties into this on the medical side is what's called a medical directive. So a medical directive, it can encompass a number of different documents. This could be a healthcare proxy, a durable power of attorney specifically for healthcare, a living will can be part of this, advanced medical instructions can be part of this, whether it's like a do not resuscitate or things like that. But the exact documents for this is going to depend upon state law. Really, estate planning is different state by state. Every state's got slightly different rules. So the documents needed for this is going to depend upon your state laws. But you do want to make sure that you do have a durable power of attorney for healthcare decisions so that someone can make those healthcare decisions for you if you're unable to do so for yourself. So in summary, as you're looking at estate planning and getting organized there, start by naming beneficiaries correctly on each account. Are beneficiary designations on all your different investment accounts up to date? Then, are your estate documents in order? This is typically a will, a trust, power of attorney, medical directive are kind of the core things that you want to make sure you have in place. If you work with a estate planning attorney, or if you even do these documents on your own, whether it's a LegalZoom or Trust and Will or online service like that, oftentimes there's packages, so this will all come together. But these are the individual components that you do want to make sure that you have as you're getting organized going into retirement. All right, the fourth area that you want to make sure is organized in retirement is your cash flow. Your cash flow is just a way of understanding what income is coming in and what are your expenses. And the best thing that you can do for this is really just having a retirement budget. What's it going to cost to do the things you want to do? Now, here's the thing. You don't even need to do anything with this quite yet. This podcast is really just kind of like that first step that precedes a lot of the other planning points I talk about on other podcasts. So if you don't have your budget, if you don't have assets organized, if you don't have some of the provisions in place, it becomes a lot harder to implement strategies or understand how you can optimize all these things. So having this, there's not really an action step other than just doing it after this episode. But once you have these things, it becomes a lot easier as you do those retirement projections, as you look at your overall asset mix and see, is this right for you? As you understand how different tax strategies or other strategies might be really impactful. So with this, the goal is just to list all of your expenses. If you don't know your budget or your income or your assets or your liabilities, you're going to have a hard time trying to optimize it all. So start by understanding what is retirement going to cost. This does not need to be complicated. I've literally had people who pulled out a blank piece of paper from their printer, scratched down what they think it's going to cost, and they sent that over to me and said, here's what I think my retirement budget is. Can you help me? So that's a basic starting point, and it's certainly better than nothing. So just knowing what you want the future to cost and having that retirement budget and updating it each year is really helpful. And then number two, have a sense of your different income options. So this isn't trying to optimize income. This isn't any income strategies. It's really just understanding what income options will you have in retirement. So what will your Social Security benefit be at different ages? Do you have a pension? If so, what options do you have? Is there a single life annuity? Is there a joint and survivor annuity? Is there a lump sum rollover option? What options do you have with that? Then investment income. So a simple way is to understand what's your current investment balance, and then maybe multiply that by 4 to 5% as a basic starting point if you want to understand how much pre-tax income could be created today. So as you do that, as you organize your cash flow, number one, creating a retirement budget, and then two, listing out income options, it just starts to give you some clarity over what's it going to cost to make all this happen, to be able to retire comfortably, and then what income options do you have that you can use as you plan to most effectively do so. The fifth thing, or the fifth kind of topic or category that you should have organized, especially in retirement, is important documents. And this is really just a centralized place where you personally know you have all of your important documents. If there's ever someone that needs to provide care for you, they know where your important documents are. If your children or heirs, if something happens to you, they need to know where these important documents are. And this is everything from life insurance policies, long-term care insurance policies, health insurance policies, a list of doctors and important contacts, medical records. Having all these things in one centralized place is really going to help. Whether that centralized place is a filing cabinet, whether it's a safe, whether it's an online document vault, there's pros and cons to each of them, but make sure they're accessible in a very secure location because you need to, of course, have access to those. If you don't know who your long-term care insurance provider is, that's going to be tough to try to track that down if the time comes where you need that. Or if your heirs don't know what life insurance policies you have, they're not going to be much good to them unless they can find where those documents are. Or if you have a medical emergency, unless your care provider knows exactly what your health insurance policies are and your doctors and your medical records, that's not going to be much use if you can't find those policies or those documents. So make sure those are all in one place. It could also include things like burial instructions. Now, you may hear that and say, you know what? I don't really care too much about where I'm buried or if I'm cremated or whatever it is when that time comes. Well, you might not, but unless your executor or your beneficiaries know that, they might feel some pressure to honor those wishes. And if they don't know exactly what those wishes are, there might be undue stress put on them when that could be solved through just a simple written instruction letter. And this can be part of your estate plan, or it can just be a basic letter. But things that aren't necessarily even important to you, think through the lens of heirs or beneficiaries. Any questions they might have, the more information you can provide, the easier it will be for them. Then, of course, you want to make sure that you have your trust, your wills, your power of attorneys. Those are very important documents that you want to make sure you have access to. That should be listed here. Tax returns, passports, marriage certificates, birth certificates, social security cards, investment statements. These are all things that should be consolidated in one place so that you're organized, which is going to help you personally, but also should something happen to you, everything's in one place for your heirs and your beneficiaries to figure out. Now, on the investment statements piece, if you have a net worth statement that is up to date, you maybe don't need the investment statements. If you have the account and the account number and lists where it's at, you maybe don't need some of these things. So another benefit of that net worth statement, and another benefit of getting organized and not having too many different accounts in too many different places, is if your heirs receive this and if something happens to you, you don't want them to have to sort through dozens of different institutions when one or two or three could have done just fine. So important documents, having those secure in a central location, whether that's digital or physical, that is very important. And again, just a quick rundown of not everything, this isn't all encompassing, but some of the basic documents to think about are life insurance policies, long-term care insurance policies, health insurance policies, and with that, I would include a list of doctors and important contacts, as well as medical records, burial instructions, your estate planning documents, which is your trust, will, and power of attorneys, tax returns, passports, marriage certificate, birth certificate, social security card, and investment statements, or just net worth statement if it includes the investment institutions, as well as the account numbers and the registration. So that's a very, very good starting point for important documents. And then if you have some of your own, some other personal documents you want consolidated, the key is, are you getting organized? Are you moving things to a central location where it's helpful for you to see everything in one place and it'd be helpful for anyone that needed to provide care for you or any future heirs to know where everything is as well? All right. And then finally, number six, the sixth thing that is very important if you want to best organize your financial life in retirement is your passwords. In an increasingly digital world, this is becoming increasingly more and more important. Think of this. If something were to happen to you today, would anyone be able to log into your important accounts? Probably not. Now, you could do a couple things. You could just write out all of your passwords on paper. So if a spouse or a child or a caregiver were to need them, they'd be able to find it. But the problems with that is passwords change often. You are probably prompted to change your password a whole lot. Or if that piece of paper fell into the wrong hands, or if you lost it, that would create some problems. Other options that I oftentimes encourage people to look at are digital password keepers, where you memorize one password to get into your digital password keeper, and then that stores all of your important passwords for you. Some options are things like LastPass, things like Keeper. These are places where you get one login and one password, and then within that, you can store all your various passwords, and you can keep those passwords up to date as they are changed. So LastPass and Keeper are just two options. There's a whole bunch of these. These are just a couple that I've used and have enjoyed. I have zero affiliation with either of them, but this is becoming an increasingly more and more important thing as well, is if something happened to you, how would the digital records that you have, or how would important documents that need to be accessed online be accessed if the individuals who were trying to figure that out did not have your passwords? So making sure that you have passwords organized and making sure you have a method by which you could share that information with others is important. So that is it. There's certainly more things that you could do to organize your financial life, but sometimes the biggest thing is take the low-hanging fruit, take the most important things, and start working there. And I think what you'll find is, like I said at the beginning, the sense of getting organized financially seems incredibly overwhelming to a lot of people. But really, once they start doing it, they realize it's much more simple than they thought it would. My hope is that this episode helps you to understand what are those areas that should be organized. It's your investments. It's understanding and updating a net worth statement on an annual basis. It's making sure that your estate documents and beneficiary designations are in order. It's making sure that you have an accurate and up-to-date sense of your cash flow, which is just a breakdown of your income and your expenses. It's making sure that you have one centralized place where you keep all of your important documents. And it's making sure that you have a list of all your passwords that gives you access to all of your important information organized in one place. Once you do that, then all the other planning points become so much easier. When everything's organized and you have a sense of what's going on and where, then you can start to take steps to improve that, enhance that, and do the best you possibly can with that. So that is it for today's episode. I hope that was helpful. If you have any questions, know that you can always submit those to the Ready for Retirement webpage at readyforretirement.co. And if you have not already done so, please leave a review. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, and I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Ready for Retirement podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and let me know by leaving a 5-star review. And as always, for a list of the notes and the resources mentioned in today's episode, you can find those at the Ready for Retirement website, which is readyforretirement.co. That's readyforretirement.co. And if you have a question that you would like for me to answer in a future episode, then you can also go to the Ready for Retirement website, readyforretirement.co. There's a page called Submit Your Question where you can submit a question for me to answer in a future episode. Thanks as always for listening, and I'll see you next time. Hey everyone, it's me again for the disclaimer. Please be smart about this. Before doing anything, please be sure to consult with your tax planner or financial planner. Nothing in this podcast should be construed as investment, tax, legal, or other financial advice. It is for informational purposes only.